podcast has been organized by the Low Residency MFA in Creative Writing Program at Dominican University of California, under the direction of Dr. Judy Halebski, in collaboration with the Communication and Media Studies Department and Penguin Radio.
So welcome. This is the final moment of our MFA residency. We're so thrilled to be able to feature our graduating students. Thank you so much for joining us. So without further ado, we'll hear from Capella Parish. Welcome, Capella. So I would advise using speaker view. And if you want, turn off your camera or at least your self view so it's relaxing for you. Welcome, Capella.
You mean for me, turn off my camera?
Is that what you're saying? I meant for the audience.
Oh, okay. Okay. And were you able to get my slides okay?
I am. Capella, do you want the slides going the whole time? Or do you want to talk?
I think that would be good. Yeah, because it kind of gauges how much time I need to use. And then I couldn't figure out a way how to share one part of my writing without making it into slides again, which I thought was kind of bulky. So I'll just read for that part.
Okay, so if there's any extended time of reading, it's nice to see your face sometimes talking too, so you can tell me when you want it like that.
Okay, I'll just say next. Okay, so just a little bit of foreword about this. It's been a crazy semester. It's been a crazy entire MFA program for me. And I just wanted to say, I thought this was going to be tomorrow. And so I threw some slides together because I felt very strongly that it was important to kind of break up the rhythm and have some more visual and interesting things for you to digest since we've been having so many long conversations. So I will just start. The title of my memoir is Still Standing. And one of the things that was very significant and important to me that was impressed upon me was the economy of language. That's something that Joan taught me specifically, is to value the words that you're using and to really bring it down to the essential elements. So there were certain things that happened to me during the residency that made me use that as a forethought. Next slide. So when I applied to the MFA residency, it was in May of 2019, and I started basically, I think it was like about 10 days later or so, it felt like 10 minutes. And I just wanted to share part of my statement that I made. In the very beginning, I had very strong direction of how I wanted to go with my writing, particularly with memoir. I would like to write an illness narrative genre piece of literary work that is about my life and the disease process I have endured. I have started the process by researching other personal illness narratives and the genre of illness narrative as a whole, and I have attached my reading list to this graduate school application. So in that application list of various books, that was the backbone of how I wanted to proceed, the people that I saw who came before me, and I wanted to use that as a skeleton framework for my studies. Next slide. So when I started writing, I didn't have a computer. And I used every piece of paper in a bound sewn notebook. So I was the student that was known for carrying these around in my purse, in my backpack, in my car, everywhere I went. I would routinely pull over driving and write down some notes. All of my notes and writing exercises during my residencies, I put into these bound notebooks. And it became very integral, especially for some of the writing exercises where we would get up very early in the morning and do fresh start, first things coming through our mind. Next slide. So in February of 2020, I got extremely sick. My son got very sick. And now in retrospect, I believe it was COVID that we had. I had no ability to leave my home. I was really frightened. I was terrified to go to the hospital. I had some knowledge of what was going on, and I didn't want to end up in the hospital intubated. So this is a page from my writing from that notebook during that time. Next slide. So it's been a journey. My apartment building nearly burned down in the Woodwood Fire in Western Marin. I got attacked by my neighbor's pit bull. I moved twice. I lost jobs. I had pretty intense surgery twice. My apartment was burglarized, but I kept staying in my MFA program. Next slide. So one of the things that I just kept doing was focusing on my writing. I just kept writing. Next slide. One of my first mentors was Thomas Burke, and he told me to read the writer James Frey. And as you know, mentors are always, always right. James Frey, if you don't know, has written a couple books and is somewhat nefarious as an author. He was plagiarizing work. He represented things as being his own. He said he was writing nonfiction. It was really fiction. Regardless, I would really tell you to look at his style of writing. And for me, it was the key that kind of opened the box for me as a writer. Next slide. For me, the words really jumped off of the page. They broke through my PTSD fog that I was having. I started to really look carefully at his language. Everything was stripped down to the bare bones. I focused on his writing. I looked at the repetition. I looked at how he looped ideas and thoughts over and over, and I paid attention. Next slide. So I read and I wrote. I read his words and I would keep reading over and over. Next slide. So one of the things that I did is I really decided during my mental health relapse during that time to only write about what mattered to me. I would only write about things I couldn't talk about. So I wrote about all the dangerous topics. I wrote about incest in my family. I wrote about being sex trafficked. I wrote about the porn industry. I wrote about homicidal feelings, about suicidal ideation, about hoarding, about filth. I wrote about my rape. I wrote about my son's rape. And these just recently were a list of taboos in our MFA panel on June 6th. Next slide. So I'm going to read here a little bit. You can zoom in if you want. This is part of an essay that I wrote. It's condensed down from that essay. My son's comments from the bathtub. If you are to teleport to the water without touching any surface, all the atoms of you are under the water, and then the water is on the surface. A lot of other things are complex. Next slide. While writing my memoir, I ran into reactivation of my trauma. Insanity is a legal term. It's not a medical term. A recent period lasted a month, then another month, due to the personal crisis of losing access to psychotherapy during the global pandemic of COVID-19. Then there was the gripping span of 6 months before that. I cannot explain how the last 18 years have folded into themselves in the blink of an eye, or that I'm approaching the inflection point of 100 years at 50 without any of the normal trappings of understanding how I got into my quicksand box. My disassociative episodes started happening in my childhood, progressed through my life, and have become a part of me. Each experience is sewn into the fabric of my body. Every day, my mind reads what is stored in my body. Skipping along habitual, well-formed grooves of a record, my mind is like a record player, skipping memory ridges that have met resistance and staying fixed and numb into what cannot break free. The disassociation with PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, can prevent rescue from the initial trauma. My experience of the therapy process was acutely painful when I tried to become integrated into my body. My sessions with my therapist felt like a cat being forcibly immersed into water. I was cornered like a rat and ready to fight. I didn't want to let go. The result felt like death. Next slide. I did not know how to exist without a chain of anxiety around my neck and my squeezed chest. My purse was on the floor of her office. The lights were muted. She sat far enough away as to not be threatening and close enough to be present. I couldn't breathe. I wondered how much time had passed. My eyes darted around the room. There was no visible clock in the room. I looked for the box of tissues. It was on the table between us, but I never saw it. I knew if I put words to the feeling that consumed me, I would dissolve. The risk was palpable. I felt resistance to acknowledge what was there. Therapy can be helpful in understanding the process of how thoughts operate, knowing what caused it and what sustained it. People with PTSD are usually the oddballs in a group, and we know we don't fit in. My neighbors, classmates, and coworkers come up with the words to describe me as difficult and uncooperative. Little do they know how much I suffer. Next slide. I have seen a few therapists, but it's usually not for very long. One died, one was prohibitively expensive, and I still owe him $200. And the last one was nixed from the agency schedule by his supervisor, even though my therapist felt I had moderate to severe mental disorder and lobbied on my behalf to continue therapy. The irony was that I was dumped during Mental Health Awareness Month, a campaign I fought to celebrate in my Department of Behavioral Health in the middle of a global pandemic. I fought back, filed a grievance to the very department that provides me a paycheck, cut off my hair on Mother's Day with my son, scrubbed and wiped all fomite surfaces that could carry infection, and took Xanax so I could sleep and function and go back to work the next day to battle the unseen enemy of the virus. COVID-19 was the perfect viral storm for an individual such as myself. The news feed updates fed my desire to become numb with hypervigilance and grief around the clock. Trauma can cause disassociation as a way of learning process, a coping mechanism. Traumatics get through life by being reclusive and occasionally peeling back the layers through tools such as therapy for self-preservation. Each journey is different. For me, it is not tidy depression or anxiety. It is hypervigilance, detached states, and numbness, and the eventual exhaustion. The degree of disassociation is what grades my case in the moderate to severe range. Next slide. The ability to adapt to various conditions and stressors is how we survive as humans. Trauma can disassociate in a way of a learning process, a coping mechanism. One of my traumas had to do with fire. Strangely enough, I became a firefighter, something that I loved because it allowed me to be self-destructive and be a risk taker. My repeated victimization was evident in my self-injury when I broke my own foot and when I was abused when I was pregnant. When I have had time to reflect in my own safe space, I see my different fractured parts of myself as not as a wound, but as a badge of survival. Next slide. And there's some books that I used for that essay. Next slide. So for me, my writing became honed down through the use of experimental language. I just slowed down. I listened to conversations. I eavesdropped. I wrote the conversations I wanted to have. And I wrote what the voices in my head told me. Next slide. So James Frey's work, Open the Box, and then AWP, the conference in 2020 that was amazing and virtual and allowed me to be present, that was the thing that validated my writing. I started to write as my authentic self. I saw other professional queer people who wrote with their raw voices, and I found my strength. So I took a little look at my memoir again after AWP, and I started to think, you know, what if I used point of view as a writing constraint to highlight this disassociation in my memoir? So this is a little picture from that notebook from AWP when I had this epiphany and I got super excited and I wrote it in pink because I was like, aha, this is it. Next slide. And so my writing started to change. This is a piece of writing I started to write. Don't suck it up, blow it, keep your shit tight, girl. What the fuck is wrong with you? You got this. Don't let them worry you none. Keep your nose to the grindstone. Don't look up. They always look to you. Don't give them the satisfaction. Don't let them see you cry. Weakness. Never you mind. They don't understand. They see you coming. Step aside. Stand strong. Keep it simple, stupid. Keep mouth shut. Keep your legs together. Floss. Wear deodorant. Keep your shit fresh. Sorry, autocorrect there. Wipe the scuff of your shoes. Run a comb through that mess. Check your pants. Carry a tampon and a Band-Aid, aspirin and a safety pin, just in case. 2 quarters for the meter or the phone. Keep it 20 and don't spend it. Walk more, drive less, don't sweat. Did judge what you eat at work? Pack your lunch wisely. Wake up and do it again. Rinse, repeat. Close lid while flushing and stand back. Smooth your hair down with sink water. Pick the lint. Pluck your eyebrows, add more deodorant. Don't take a nap. You'll never wake up. Next slide. So I have been going through my memoir and breaking it apart. And one of the things that I have done is to really look at shifting that second person point of view and shifting it into the third person point of view. It's like the amazing gear shift on a fast car. So when that pivot happens in my memoir, that is the crux of the memoir, and that is when it shifts. So that's something that I've been working on this morning, late last night, like, is it in this chapter, is it in that chapter? When do I let go of the second person? When do I validate in the third? Do I ever go back to the second person? So these are some things that I've been working with. So I think I have about 6 more minutes, maybe. Is that right? Do I have like six more minutes?
Yeah, Capella, that's fine. Yeah.
Okay. So you can stop sharing. And then I am going to just read a little bit from my memoir, if that is okay. Maybe just for 5 minutes. So this is a little bit of the introduction. This is my illness narrative, a literary work, a quest narrative about my life and what I have endured through uncensored self-discovery, insight, and questioning of my motives along the way. I have come to believe that the best thing for my self-care is to be involved in the care of others through my writing. When I give back to others who do not have a voice, who feel alone and in need, it helps me. It is my own form of pain management therapy. I learned my avocation of firefighting through the acquired muscle memory of what to do when others would feel that the sky is falling. It all cemented into my psyche and body. The scope and scale of my local fire department taught me a lifetime of skills. I learned from the streets, from my community, and from the people who came before me. I didn't get paid for what I did, but the hours I served my rural community helped others in need, which gave the local government a considerable amount of money. I was in paramedic academy a few years ago and volunteering as an EMT firefighter, all set to pursue my dream to be a fire medic, when early one morning, I was toned out on my pager for an MCI multiple casualty incident involving all of my neighbor's family of children off Pacific Coast Highway 1. All of those children eventually perished in that car accident. 6 months later, I started complaining of limping and foot pain, which slowed me down. I didn't know that I broke my own foot trying to get those children out of the smashed car. When I put my foot against the door to get them out, the adrenaline surged through my body, masked the pain, and I fractured my own foot. The bone became necrotic and never healed. I now have a permanent disability, exist in chronic pain, and struggle with what I thought was PTSD, but is much more complex than that one incident. And I'll read for just 3 more minutes. This is chapter one. There's a little portion before chapter one. My first memory is of gray chimney ashes that I found outside our family home. I patted the silky gray, soft ashes gently, squishing the purity of once was, the soft resistance, as they were transformed into a slippery pile of softness. I raised my cupped hands, offering them up, and the ashes dispersed into the air, sparkling slowly in the sunlight. Purity in destruction, the discarded remnants of what had burned. Chapter one. The last time I saw my father was about 25 years ago. His house on 820 Cynthia Street was nestled on the top of a small urban mountain situated in the northeast armpit of Los Angeles. I barely knew how to get there, and it seemed best to veer left and go up in second gear past the taco trucks and loud boombox music of the streets. I parked my Buick past the red Toyota pickup truck he once promised me, now rusting in the field. I thought of what it must be like for him to drive past that truck every day on the way home from teaching. I was early, my father was late. I came out of the orchard to meet him with a brown grocery bag of avocados, newly picked. His eyes met mine, and I saw his jugular vein bulge and his face redden. "You're stealing my avocados," he said. I felt the sick sinking feeling of my heart unraveling like yarn, down, back to my unhinged childhood of helplessness. What? I thought. Then I lied and said, they were on the ground. He said nothing. I tried to speak. The words came out of my mouth and dropped flat in the dry heat of the oppressive afternoon. I said, I thought it was okay to take some. Why would you think that? I thought, this is your house. This is your land, your trees, your avocados, and because I am your daughter. But I wasn't, not in that moment, and not for so many years. And I'm done at time.
Great. Thank you, Capella, so much for sharing your work and your process and so much about your personal journey through this program. We have time for a couple questions and responses. Kim, I see your hand.
Yeah, I just want to say congratulations, Capella. Woo! I remember when you joined our cohort, and I can't believe how much time has flown by and how when you started, you had this desire to write this story, and now you're like here at the end of this journey. Well, maybe it's the beginning of a new journey, but you know, wrapping this part of it up. So just, you know, really should be proud of yourself. It's really wonderful, and I'm just really happy for you.
Ditto.
Congratulations.
Yay.
Any questions? Anyone want to have a response to Capella? Anything more to say?
I think your writing is incredibly brave. And I wish I'd had some more classes with you so I could have experienced that with you a little bit more. But my God, your writing is just, it's just stunning.
Yay! I remember when you said that and you're like, I wish I could stick around, keep reading your writing. That was like a great compliment when you were leaving. You like grabbed my hand. You're like, I like your work. It was really sweet.
I find myself hanging on every word because it's such a personal story. And it's just, I mean, I can relate to parts of it and just be fascinated by others. And it's just great. So thank you for sharing.
Sure. Thank you.
Yeah, Capella, I wish you were still going to be here because I'm only in my second semester. And I had the last semester with you. And I feel like, maybe it didn't seem that way to you, but I feel like I connected to your writing and I feel like you connected to mine. And there was just this, your work was so good and so resonant. And it inspired me to write the piece I read in the last, a little bit that I read in the last read around that we had. And I've always been so moved by your work and so how you write so raw and so real and so authentic. And it's just, it's beautiful to see, and I wish I could see more of it, and I wish we could work together more and sort of be inspired and play off each other. So let's make that happen sometime.
I'd like to add that the poetry on top of the prose at the beginning, that was just beautiful. The image, it set the tone, and it said so much more than it says. So it was, I thought that was really, it was beautiful.
That's right. The notebook covers are kind of like mini collages, aren't they? I love seeing those.
Well, there's a lot
counterpoint.
A lot of you guys are very visual, and there's some artists in the group, so I just thought I'd throw those in there, you know, and it's kind of dense, heavy stuff, so I was like, how can I break it up? I don't want to just sit there and read. That's really intense. And so I copy pasted some of it in the slides, but I think, you know, some little doodles, I had a couple little videos of me thumbing through them, but they're too big to upload. But yeah, I had some cute sketches of my dogs and stuff. But I think that's important. Like I was looking back and I was like, holy cow. Yeah, I thought I was dying of COVID and I had COVID. I'm almost positive. Like who has pneumonia for 2 months? You know, like that. That was crazy. And now we all know that was COVID, right? You know, looking back. So I thought that was good to put that in there.
I could almost see a montage of those. Yeah.
I just wanted to jump in to say how much your presence has been almost what the Dominican writing program meant to me, in terms of you seem like such a leader of the students. Your presence has been really wonderful at the workshops, and I will really miss you as well.
Oh, that's really sweet. Thank you.
Congratulations.
Yay.
So this is probably voyeuristic of me, but what I like best of any of all of our work is when people really get down, get really personal, really intimate, tell me raw, fresh, new stuff that I could never know otherwise. Thank